The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Hello, my name is Danny Roth, and this is Everyday Horror. It's a podcast where we watch at least one horror movie for every day in the month of October. And then we talk about it. I'm joined today by Matthew Buck, who is the film brain. Matthew, welcome to the podcast. How are you?
Thank you. I'm doing fine today.
So you chose a movie. You chose... What movie? You know what? I don't even want to set it up in a way that'll create bias. What movie did you pick, Matthew?
Well, I decided to pick Better Watch Out.
So you went for technically a Christmas horror movie. Technically.
Technically. It came out in October
in the sense that it's... Yeah, but it's supposed to be set... It says it right in the description that it's Christmas time. Mm-hmm. I will say this is not a very... It's a Christmas movie in the sense that I believe it is meant to evoke some elements of Home Alone.
Yes.
I haven't watched it in a year, so we're coming at this from a slightly... Usually I watch a movie on the same day when I talk about it, but this one I watched a year ago, and that was enough for me.
I completely understand having watched the movie more recently than you.
Out of curiosity, why was this the movie that you picked? Why was this the one you wanted to watch?
If I'm being perfectly honest, it was in the Amazon rentals that I had, and I was thinking, ooh, well, that sounds intriguing. Maybe this will have some interesting things to talk about. And it turns out it does. It's just...
Yes.
Yeah. It's got a lot of interesting things to talk about. It's just... not a lot of very comfortable things to talk about.
Let me ask you a question. Have you watched a lot of Christmas horror films before? Because there's a lot of them. That is definitely, I think, of the subgenres of horror, it is one of the biggest. Mm. Christmas horror. There are tons and tons and tons of movies.
I would definitely say that I've watched, if we can call this horror, Gremlins. Gremlins definitely springs to mind. I wouldn't say I've seen too many Christmas horror movies. Most of the time, I actually seem to find that I stumble into Christmas action films.
Bruce Willis just pretty recently said that Die Hard is not a Christmas movie. And I'm mad at him.
He did. And Die Hard's one of my favorite movies. And I'm not sure I agree with him on that front either. I mean, let's face it, it's pretty solidly a Christmas movie right down to the soundtrack.
I don't know how he could define it as anything else, but I would say Better Watch Out, comparatively to Christmas horror movies that I have seen and like, and even ones I don't like, my first immediate criticism of it was that it's not terribly Christmassy at all. If you're thinking like, you know, one of the very first slasher movies ever made, it even predates Halloween technically, Black Christmas. That's a great Christmas movie. More recently, Krampus is pretty great.
Oh, of course, I've seen Krampus. Yes, I did see Krampus.
Evil Santa Clauses are pretty common. That's like a pretty common theme.
Yes, that is.
So like Silent Night, Deadly Night, those films often feature people at least dressed as Santa Claus. There's Christmas Evil.
Santa's Sleigh with Goldberg.
Yeah, there's
the classic.
Yeah, there's tons of them. I don't know if Jack Frost, the non-Michael Keaton one, counts as a Christmas movie or not, but it does involve an evil snowman, which by my accounting instantly makes it more Christmassy.
It does make it slightly more festive than this movie.
I think that's the first thing to set out. The reason why I don't think it matters too much if we're talking about Better Watch Out in October rather than December is that it truly is not a Christmas movie by any metric other than I think there's like on the cover, there are some Christmas lights. That's about as Christmassy as I recall it getting.
Yeah, one of the posters is a Christmas jumper that has sort of weaponry like guns and things like that, and that's probably more use of the Christmas aesthetic than the actual movie does.
So, if you were going to try to give like the elevator pitch for this movie, how would you describe it?
Well, I think first off the bat, I should say that if you are interested in this movie, don't listen to this podcast right now, because this is the kind of movie where you're not supposed to know what's about going in. So on that level, you might want to steer clear, because we are going to get into serious spoiler territory right from the jump.
Yeah.
Okay, so those people have left. Elevator pitch in 3, 2, 1. What if Kevin McAllister from Home Alone was basically a murderer?
Yeah.
You know, that's basically the pitch.
My problem in part with this movie is not even the movie's fault. It's that I had just gotten done watching a really bad movie about a babysitter called The Babysitter, which was a McGee joint, which had been on Netflix. And they sort of had gotten released in a streaming world around the same time. And I hated The Babysitter so much. But they're like the opposite kind of movie. So like The Babysitter is about like, what if a babysitter was evil and a killer, and in this case, like a bit of a Satan worshiper. And then in the case of Better Watch Out, it is, what if the kid being babysat for is evil and a killer? And on its face, I don't think that's a bad idea. Like the sort of flip, like, what if we looked at Kevin McAllister from the perspective of, wow, he's throwing giant, you know, like full paint cans at people's heads. That's monstrous.
Yes.
Makes a lot of sense.
See, the premise of this movie is something I could sort of get behind. I get the impression that the people that made this movie, they really came up with it while they were watching Home Alone. It just has that kind of feeling of, they're a little bit tipsy, they're watching Home Alone, and they're seeing the paint can scenes, and they're going, I think we got a pitch for a movie. What if Kevin McAllister kind of was a bit homicidal? Not realizing that that's not a terribly original pitch. Even for the time that Home Alone was made, that's not a terribly original twist on it, because Macaulay Culkin has kind of flipped on his own persona several times before. I mean, there was even in 1993, The Good Son, which was basically psycho Kevin McAllister and throwing dummies off of bridges and things like that. And more recently, he did that sketch, didn't he? Where sort of grown up Kevin McAllister, if I recall.
Yeah, it does it in my mind. And that is sort of the immediate thing that I thought of about that as a concept, is that it sounds like an SNL sketch more than it does like a movie.
It does feel very overstretched over the course of the movie. It's not a terribly long film. It's just under 90 minutes or so, and it still feels like it's far too long. It's one idea. It takes the one idea and doesn't go any further with it, in my opinion. It spends a whole entire first act stalling, and then it goes into the second act. It unleashes the gag, as it were. And then you get the sense that they really had nowhere to go with it. And the thing is, I knew this was a comedy horror, so I figured, okay, this would be funny. The premise doesn't... It does have potential. You know, it could be okay. And then I was watching it going, yeah, no, this really isn't working. This really isn't working. And I was spent part of the film trying to work out why for me it wasn't. And I think it comes down to one crucial element, but we'll get back to that. I think what we should really talk about is the big Home Alone connection here, because they are full on exploiting it all the way through. They make no secret of it.
No, it's pretty clear. Although, yeah, the sort of the ways in which they twist it are interesting, because I mean there's a babysitter there at all, which I think sort of adds an element.
They definitely go out of their way to add elements from Home Alone. I've seen Home Alone far too many times, as probably many people have, so I was definitely playing the game of, ooh, spot the backwards reference. Like most of them are just sort of thrown into the movie without any real kind of payoff, just other than hey, this was a thing that was in Home Alone. That there's a pizza guy that turns up fairly early on in the movie to deliver a pizza that I don't know if we ever find out who actually ordered it. It doesn't make sense, because the pizza guy arrives early on, and it turns out it's got mushrooms on it, and the kid's not supposed to have mushrooms. And then it's sort of inferred that he ordered it. So how does that make any sense?
Yeah, well, you see, he's trying to throw her off with mushrooms. It's...
Yes. There's a spider in the movie.
Yeah.
There's a spider in the movie very early on. There's a jump scare with the spider, and then at the end of the film, he captures the spider back up, so I guess that's his pet. Again, that's a sort of thing like, hey, do you remember Home Alone? And then, of course, there's the paint can bit where that's literally the opening salvo, essentially, is the first time we meet the kid. Is they're talking about that scene from Home Alone specifically, just in case you didn't get what the inspiration for this movie was, they're going to flat out state it right there.
Yeah, I think that's like one of those tricks where you wonder who was behind making the movie, right? Like, did our director and writer who had sort of worked together on the process have a producer that said, yeah, but what if people don't remember Home Alone? Like, who was the person there that thought people would not remember this thing? Like, that they felt it was necessary to just press the gas a little more on that. And by that, I mean drive a car directly into a wall with the words Home Alone on
they
it.
They are overt.
It was weird. It's a weird film. I think that my actual biggest problem with the film is that because they're padding out so much, and by the way, the reason why I didn't... say like, oh, you know, if you don't want to be spoiled, is because I feel like the issue of this film is that the reason why there's a spoiler moment is because they don't really have a good narrative. And so once you know that, it's almost pointless.
Yeah, it's technically not really a plot twist. It's just the plot, you know?
Yeah, and they just take a while to lead up to it. And my problem is that, so Better Watch Out is a film that was existed on planet Earth now. Mm. And I looked at it and I thought, well, you're trying to do this thing where it's sort of goofy and fun. And and almost in a way, there are moments where you're kind of, I feel, nudged towards rooting for the villain a little bit.
A couple of times.
And I have to tell you, I don't really want to root for what is effectively toxic masculinity in action.
Yes, this is the big thing with the movie, and I think what sinks it, it's the kind of thing that's way too heavy on the movie, just, and it throws it in there right from the jump. I mean, I got to be honest, I came into the movie sort of knowing about what would happen in it, and so I wasn't viewing it from a completely clean perspective. But even so, I think you'd have to not be paying very much attention, considering the blinking lights the very first time we meet our main character, well, the kid in the movie, played by Levi Miller from Pan. Luke is the character's name. So Luke, the first time we meet him, he's with his friend Garrett, who's played by Ed Oxenbould. One of the weird things about this movie is that it's a reunion of the kids from The Visit, the M. Night Shyamalan movie, because Olivia Dijon plays Ashley, the babysitter. And so they're back together in this movie, and we have the kid from Pan, who is doing his best Psycho Kid impression. And the first time we see Luke and Garrett together, he's already looking at, is it like a dirty magazine or something like that? He's looking out on his tablet.
They set him up pretty much right from the get-go.
Yeah.
They really, it's very strange to me. Like, I think it's a very hard balance to strike, and I think that was going to be an issue for anybody, but because they sort of put him in an almost Freddy Krueger-esque role where, like, you're supposed to like him.
Yeah.
That it becomes really difficult, because I have to tell you, his raison d'etre, like, his entire motivation for the film is he's trying to have sex with his babysitter even though she is not interested in having sex with him. He's just trying to force it. And in that way, that's, you know, like, what he's trying to do is create a situation of dubious consent.
Yes.
This movie is new. Like, this isn't like, I can't say, well, you know, they made this movie in the 70s or the 80s. This movie was made in 2016. It was released wide in 2017. We are all familiar with the fact that dubious consent is synonymous with rape.
And the kid is 12.
And he's very, yeah, and so, like, it's just icky all the way through.
Yes.
And that is, you know, it's not like the actors have done a bad job. In fact, I think if you look, you'll see that in the world of Rotten Tomatoes, which is a metric that people value still for some reason, this movie did very well.
And, it did.
And a lot of people sort of, I think, chimed in with the same point, which is that these young actors all turned in very good performances. And I wouldn't dismiss that. I wouldn't say that I think that they did bad work. It's definitely not on them.
It got 67% on Rotten Tomatoes. I did look it up and I was slightly surprised having watched the movie, thinking that's a bit of a high score considering, but it wouldn't be the first time that I've disagreed with critics on a horror movie, Cloth Hereditary.
Oh gosh, yes, that's a podcast for another day, but
yes,
yeah,
it is.
Absolutely.
No, there's nothing wrong with the performances. In fact, I think it's a fairly well-made movie on a lot of levels, especially on terms of cinematography. Some of the cinematography in this movie is really well done. Some of the camera shots, there's some nice moments where characters are knocked down to the ground and the camera flips alongside them, and I thought those were quite nice shots. They definitely did that a couple of times with a little trick moment. If anything, Levi Miller might actually be too good in the role of the killer because I found him obnoxious beyond belief.
Yeah, and that's the thing, is that he is portraying the character the way in the real world, I think, like, he doesn't, that's the thing. He is playing a person who has this mentality. And if you subtract the murder part, everything else about it is not terribly atypical, I have to be honest. Like,
it's
that
not
is
very
the thing
far-fetched.
Yeah, like, everything else about it feels very normal.
Even in the first part of the movie, even before it becomes clear what he's doing, it's still very much that he's obviously nursing a crush on her. It's kind of set up that Ashley is going to be leaving soon, so this is kind of his last shot, as it were. And so he's definitely trying to put the moves on her, and she's shutting it down immediately because...
Yes, because he's a child.
Yes, exactly. But even so, he's still deliberately crossing her boundaries. He's doing things like putting his hand on her thigh and things like that, and just being really, really creepy, even before we get to the point where the movie's supposed to be establishing him as a major credible threat. And that in itself doesn't really work. It's again one of those things where they're playing that a little bit too overtly if it was meant to be surprising.
Yeah, I don't... And that really is the thing that I kept thinking of throughout the entire movie, was that once you've set up the idea that this kid has this mentality, honestly, nothing becomes surprising to me because I live on planet Earth and also I'm on Twitter.
Yes.
And I've seen how people behave. So at that, it's not that it's implausible. In fact, if anything, the problem is that it's all too plausible. And I find that holiday horror movies in particular, but also very common with horror movies in general, is that their appeal is that you go, you scream a couple times, and then you feel relaxed, because that could never actually happen. Like, it's this sort of safe thing. You go and you see it and you feel relieved at the end because,
yes,
you know, there is no such thing as a Krampus. You know what I mean? Like, that's not a thing that's actually going to happen. Whereas, you know, I finished watching this movie and thought, no, I absolutely believe that a 12-year-old could, there's nothing unbelievable about this. And in fact, at what point does a young person or a young boy torment so many women on Twitter that he's basically done the equivalent of what this kid did in one home on one night anyway?
Yes.
So and the thing is, it's not such a good film. It's not so well narratively driven and not such a great character piece that it's like, you know what I mean? Like, capital A,
yeah,
art.
It really unbalances the movie. It really does. It's sort of it sort of feels a bit occasionally like Home Alone meets Funny Games.
Yeah.
Sort of. And it's tonally kind of all over the place because I think it's meant to be a horror comedy, but the thing is, when you incorporate that element into the mix, and I'm going to call it for what it is, it's basically extended sexual threat all the way through the movie. And
yeah.
I'm not joking here. They really do play up that angle quite heavily, and it really unbalances the movie because you think, oh, well, this kind of twisted spin on Home Alone, that could be fun. And then the second this starts, you go, no, it's not fun. As soon as it kind of got deep into the movie, I was thinking to myself, I've made a really terrible mistake here. This is not what I signed up for. This isn't fun anymore. It's just really kind of unpleasant. And this was the pervasive feeling I felt all the way through this movie, is that there's something about it that just feels terribly mean-spirited, just terribly kind of black-hearted about it and cynical. And it just was something that I could not shake throughout the entire movie. It was something right from the very first shot of the film. The very first shot of the film is a young kid outside the house making a snowman, and then another kid smashes it and she calls him an expletive as she chases after him. And you go, oh, this is the tone of the movie, pretty much there in a nutshell. And it continues like that the entire time. And once things get properly established, that's when things really start getting nasty, but never in a fun way, never in a kind of properly amusing, kind of darkly comic way as it really should do. Just really kind of, ugh, get it off me. I kind of want to shower, you know?
I wonder how we would feel about this movie if the sexual element was subtracted.
Yes, if he was just
mentally unwell and he just, you know, for completely different reasons, like let's just say it was as simple as he had an attachment to her in general, and now she's going to leave him and he's furious about that, and you don't know at first that that's what the deal is because he's keeping it under the skin a bit better, and over time you start to see the mask fall.
If they were more implying it rather than being overt with it, I think that would make that a little bit more palatable.
Yeah, I think that's it. I think if they had sort of, if you really had to pay attention to catch it, and if honestly, if you had taken the weird he's 12 and he wants to have sex with his babysitter element out entirely, and it was more just, you know, as is certainly common in a very different way, but amongst, I think, people who struggle mentally, wherein, like, they latch onto something and they decide that they need that thing and that thing owes something to them. It doesn't have to be sexual. Like, I think if you took that weird bit out of it, it would immediately improve the film. And then really the other question becomes, is there any way, even at that point, to make it so that you can sort of enjoy the kid at all? Because that is the other big issue, is that there are a bunch of moments, especially the end of the film, wherein I definitely feel as though what I am being nudged to feel by the people who directed and wrote the film is that, this kid should be able to go to the hospital and still kill this bitch at the end. Ha ha. And like, that's weird. That's a really weird note to end on.
The whole last section of the movie is very, very weird for numerous sort of reasons. Because it sort of ends on this note where the kid has essentially won because Luke has killed his best friend, Garrett, as he's trying to free Ashley, who's by this point wrapped up in Christmas lights and tape, I think. And he kills Garrett, and then he attempts to kill Ashley, it should be phrased. It's cut in a really awkward way to make it look like he's killed her, because I think he stabs her in the neck or something like that, but we don't see it very well. It's not terribly well photographed, and it's to conceal the fact that it turns out that Ashley does survive, but we don't know that until slightly later. So he's committed these murders, he's He has killed three people, grievously maimed another, and he sets up this whole scenario to make it look like Ashley's ex-boyfriend has come along and killed everyone and then committed suicide in the back garden in this terribly kind of convoluted way. And then the parents are coming back. The parents are played by Virginia Madsen and Patrick Warburton, who are totally wasted in this movie.
Yeah, unbelievable that they're in it at all, because they're such talented performers and they get nothing.
Such nothing parts. Like, absolutely nothing. So the parents are coming back, and there's this... They set up earlier that he was sleepwalking, but it turns out he hasn't actually been sleepwalking. It's just he's been pretending he's been sleepwalking. But they'd asked the babysitter to put the pencil on the door to make it clear, you know, that he's asleep. So he tries to go back into his room, can't reset the pencil, so he has to go around to do it through the other room and go out the window. And they're coming back, and they nearly catch him on the Christmas lights outside. He knocks over something, and I'm thinking to myself, where is the tension in this scene supposed to be? Where is my sympathy supposed to be? Am I supposed to be actually rooting for him to get away with this? Because I'm not.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. There's nothing else to do at that point, because we don't know if the babysitter is alive at all. We are meant to understand that she's dead. We are meant to understand that the killer is victorious. And yeah, then all of a sudden they put you in this position where the movie is 100% from his perspective.
Mm.
That's
it.
It
is very largely, you know, from
except with one last moment wherein it's not, but then still the end of the film, it still ends on him, which is absolutely bizarre to me. And I honestly, the more we talk about it, the more I think that they strayed too far from the Home Alone formula. That's the problem. had it literally just been, what if Home Alone, but from the perspective of the Sticky Bandits, that's your movie. If they had just done that, honestly, if they had not tried to say like, oh, but there's a babysitter and a friend, it just disconnects from what the core concept I think was meant to be. And
it just adds baggage.
It is. It's just unnecessary baggage. And if it had been something as simple as, you know, two crooks, and all you have to do is make them slightly relatable, right? Like, they've got bad home lives, they can't get jobs, they've been in jail before. You know, it's not hard to relate with criminals to some degree.
It's sort
degree,
of a bit like, the movie that you're describing sort of sounds a bit like Don't Breathe, but with a kid.
Yeah, like, that's a fun movie, and can still be twisted, and, you know, and you can have sympathy for the criminals, but they're still criminals. They still asked to, they didn't ask for this extreme outcome, but they did decide to try to steal from someone's home. So yes. If it was just this absolutely ridiculous, I cannot believe that we are not only getting defeated by a kid, but this kid is going to kill us and he seems to be a completely unstoppable force, is, I think, something that you could get a couple of good jump scares out of, and something that would be blackly humorous. I think that it would be very, you would be hard pressed not to laugh at that. But to create this babysitter role and this best friend role, and to have like these innocent sort of boyfriends and ex-boyfriends that come in and also suffer, makes it really impossible to, like, I don't, like, there's almost nobody to like in the movie except...
There really isn't, except for Ashley.
Except for Ashley, and she really, the further into the movie you get, the less the protagonist she is.
Yeah, she spends most of this movie pretty much tied up. At the end of the first act, when the film kind of flips the switch, as it were, she gets knocked down a flight of stairs unconscious, and she wakes up and she's tied up, and that's pretty much how she spends virtually the entire rest of the running time.
Yeah, she's only heroic in that she gets a little lucky here and there. Like, there's really not a lot of moments to cheer for her ingenuity. Really, again, the ingenuity lands on the villain.
What really annoyed me is that the movie, at the end of the second act, she does eventually break free from her constraints. She manages to get out. Her boyfriend gets murdered brutally with the paint can bit, which is sort of the big sort of coup de grace, as it were, of this movie. That's the big centerpiece moment, is that...
Oh, yes. I mean, Unmistakably, the best moment of this horrible movie is the paint can to the face.
Yes.
I mean, you can just like, that's it. Honestly, I would not recommend watching this movie, but if you can just get a clip of that you've seen it. You've seen what you needed to see.
That is literally the whole reason this movie exists. It really is. But she gets free. She tries to escape out the back garden. And at this point, this movie should be over. It really should be over at this point. If this was any other movie, this would literally be the moment where she wins. But of course, it's this movie, so it has to do something stupid and mean-spirited. So there are carolers outside. It looks like she's trying to flag their attention by running over to them. And then wham, brick into the head. Which was the
brick. Yeah, I had forgotten about the carolers.
Yes, they're barely in the movie. They don't have a line, but the brick was from earlier in the movie. It was thrown through the window and it had a message on it saying, if you leave, you die, or something like that. But
yeah.
And it was at that moment where I really turned on the movie, because there was no way that our little killer could have actually got outside to whammy her like that. And also, if we're doing this whole, well, what if Home Alone was real kind of thing, that would have killed her. Movie's over at that point. Like, we've just established a second ago the definitive answer to the debate of what happens to a paint can when it's dropped from someone hanging from a banister, and yet someone gets whacked in the head with a brick 5 minutes later and they survive. What consistency, movie.
Yeah, I mean, at that point, it almost becomes splitting hairs. But yeah, I mean, like, at that, it's just one thing after another that shows how uneven it is. Really, the only thing I can say in favor of the movie is that it has genuinely been, I think, a year since I've seen it. And gosh, I definitely remembered it. I sure remember, I think if I had just had a conversation quietly with myself in a room alone, I really, I think I still would have been able to manufacture in my mind most of the details of this film. But, as you talk about them, not only do I remember them, but I can actually see them in my mind. So it's very well acted. It's very well shot. It's just that it's impossible to get over the unevenness and the fact that you are ostensibly meant to root for a sexually harassing, homicidal child. It's just so weird.
Yes, he is a little homicidal, misogynist murderer.
Not a great way to do it, yeah.
No, it really isn't. And it's full of moments like she's tied... The first time that she's tied up, as opposed to the second time, the first time she's tied up, he does actually grope her. He does do that, doesn't he?
Because right. Oh, God. Yeah. Gross.
Which one do you want, left or right? Like, you. Ugh. Stop it. Stop this.
No, thank you. Yeah, it's too much. Honestly, so I would actually say I think that if you were going to watch this movie, I almost would pair it with The Babysitter, and because they're both terrible, but they're both well shot.
Yes.
And you can imagine, if you want, that that the babysitter from The Babysitter and this horrible child from Better Watch Out are in a movie together.
Yes,
that's it. So you've taken these two characters and done your Freddy versus Jason. Honestly, that would be a much better movie.
Or like, you could watch it. Or you could watch it with The Visit. But that would make things actually weird. That would actually make it really weird, because of course they're even younger in The Visit, which just makes it
I know a lot of people did not like The Visit. I kind of actually, there are things to enjoy about The Visit in my mind.
You know what? The Visit was more successful as a horror comedy than this ever was.
Yeah, I would say, in my heart, if you've already watched it, then you have my sympathies, unless you enjoyed it, in which case, there's no wrong answers in life. If you haven't watched this yet, I kind of want to toss out movies that are more worth watching,
yes,
that sort of fit maybe a similar bill. So we could maybe say The Visit, since it's got some of the same talent.
It does have a lot of the same talent, and does kind of have some of the same vibe to it a little bit in some places, in the sort of, it's the sort of subversion of the suburban environments there as well in that movie. I don't think The Visit is wholly successful at what it does. I think it's tonally uneven, and of course it's a movie that, it's a horror movie that ends with a kid rapping over the credits badly. But,
I completely forgot about that. Yeah. I mean, yeah, no, I would say if you're looking for something that is like goofy, fun Christmas movie, The Krampus is always a good way to go, because it really also has a bunch of people that you're not supposed to quite like who are punished, but in a way that it is very blackly entertaining and kind of funny. And if you're
seasonal.
Looking for a, yeah, and honestly, and that's the other thing. As we opened with, this is not actually a very seasonal film. You know, if you're really interested in Christmas and Father Christmas and all that sort of stuff,
I think this is a weird sort of quirk about the movie. It's actually Australian. It's one of those movies where it's
sort of a
foreign country filming for America. So this is technically, you could almost say this was a sort of Ozploitation movie, just simply by dint of the fact that it was shot in Australia with Australian actors pretending it's small town suburban America, which is just a very weird thing, really.
Yeah, I don't even know what to say to that. Ozploitation as a subgenre. There are way better things you could be watching than this. It's weird to even think of it as Ozploitation because it doesn't feel like it at all.
It really doesn't. They've done on a production level, they've done a really good job of disguising it, but it isn't that hard considering that the whole movie takes place entirely in one location anyway.
It's not really pulling a great feat. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, for me, Christmas movies, if you want something gross and terrible that critics hated, then go back and watch Silent Night, Deadly Night. If you want something that is horrific and really redefined the horror genre, then Black Christmas is the one. And if you want something that's sort of goofy and over the top, but still Christmassy, then I think Krampus is the way to go.
There's some other ones as well, like Rare Exports as well. I've heard very good things about that movie. I really should watch that at some point, but I've heard very good things about Rare Exports.
I don't know. I think what I would say is, honestly, there are a lot. I mean, I think that Christmas horror movies are a delightful subgenre of horror. I really enjoy them thoroughly. I just think it was a shame that this particular one does not quite measure up compared to some of the ones that are genuinely great and the ones that are terrible but very entertaining. If you want to watch someone get it in the face with a paint can, I guess watch it, but that's really the only thing I could say.
Yeah, I mean, it's a movie that should be far more fun than it really is, and it's just unfortunate because I think it's just a matter of the story that they're telling just really doesn't work on so many different levels. It's just got far too many problems from a sort of thematic point of view, in terms of actual likability of the characters. It's just too much. They just need to sort of dial it back. And instead of going, well, what if we did this and it'll be really kind of messed up? You know, what if they just dialed it back and just sort of made it perhaps a bit more overtly comic? Because at points this really didn't scream hilarious to me or anything like that. It just as I was watching it, it just kind of made me feel weirdly miserable. And that's not what a movie should be doing, especially not a movie like this.
If you're listening to this podcast right now, thank you very much. If you have not already subscribed to Everyday Horror, please do. And if you haven't given a review, give that a shot. Everybody likes that. And please check out the other podcasts in the Sci-Fi Wire family, whether it's Strong Female Characters or The Fandom Files, the official Winona Earp podcast, or Who Won the Week. That one's hosted by this guy Danny Roth. Never heard of him, but I hear he's a great guy. And before we end it, Matthew, where can people find you online?
Okay, you can find me on YouTube on my channel Film Brain, which I do reviews of bad films on Bad Movie Beatdown, and I do movies that haven't opened in the US yet, but have opened in the UK on a series called Projector, and I do a couple of other things on the side. You can find me on Twitter, FB_BMB. I'm on Tumblr at FilmBrainBMB, and I'm also FilmBrain on Facebook, so I have plenty of options if you want to pursue me.
Great. And my name is Danny Roth, and you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Danny Ordinary. That is Danny with one N, Ordinary also with one N. Thank you for listening. And remember, sometimes the best cure for the horrors of every day is a little everyday horror.